Hi, and welcome back to the Outsource Accelerator podcast. This is episode number 323. Today, I had a fantastic conversation with Laurel Farah. She is the founder and CEO of DistributeConsulting.com. Of course, it's such a hot topic at the moment with COVID forcing this upon basically every organization in the world to some degree. It is all about remote and distributed and digitizing the workforce. And Laurel is an expert in this, has been working remotely for 15 years and has been consulting in the space for many years now. So a fantastic conversation with Laurel. We cover so many topics, and I could have carried on the conversation for another hour easily. I encourage all of you to, explore outsourcing, remote work, and distributed teams. I think we've all been kind of forced to acknowledge the opportunity in this space over the last year, and I think it's such an exciting area. So enjoy the conversation, and of course, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Hi, and welcome back, everybody. Today, I'm joined by Laurel Farah. I hope I got that right, Laurel. Welcome to the show. I've been practicing your name, and I think I've almost got it wrong. Laurel, what does remote work mean to you?
Oh, good question. It's kind of a broad topic, isn't it? There's a lot of room for interpretation. To me, I like it at the umbrella phase in which we're talking about any work that is not location dependent, that we can be mobile and that work is dependent on a person instead of a place.
It's so good to have you on the show. You are the CEO and founder of Distribute Consulting. And, maybe 2 years ago, it was a pretty underground topic, this whole remote thing, whether it's viable to run a company remotely. And now it's on the forefront of everyone's attention and operations and the forefront of their mind. Can you maybe just explain, I assume you've had a lot more experience than just the last year that most people have that have been thrown into remote work via COVID. But can you just explain a little bit of your history and progress with remote and distributed work?
Absolutely. I'm happy to. So I have been working remotely myself for 15 years and operating remote-friendly companies that entire time. So my background and expertise in virtual organizational development and behavior comes from being a COO of remote-friendly teams. Back 15 years ago, we certainly didn't have this language of virtual organizational behavior or even remote work. It was all just trying to be flexible and adaptable and being resourceful as a business leader and executive. And so as it evolved as an option, as new products and services came to market of things like the cloud and video calls and smartphones. It just kept getting easier and easier and easier. So it was about 5 years ago that I stopped answering questions on the side and opened up distribute consulting. And it was just started as me being an independent contractor and consultant answering questions for businesses about how to operate without an HQ office. And now here we are. I'm absolutely honored to lead an incredible team of other remote work experts around the world, and we advise some of the world's largest companies and governments on how to leverage the power of virtual workforces.
Matt Mullenweg, who I'm sure we're all pretty familiar with, the founder of WordPress, super important guy, leads a distributed team, and he says that you have to be important, you have to be careful what words you choose, and he chooses distributed as opposed to remote, because remote has connotations of people being isolated, without collaboration and lonely and things like that. Do you find it's important? You're of course called distribute. Do you find it these things are important, or is it really just semantics?
I do think that it is very important, but I also think that we need to acknowledge the fact that remote work as an industry and as a community was still in its infancy prior to COVID. And so we were still having these conversations about what is the right term and what does this exactly mean versus this term. We were still really developing a culture ourselves. And then all of a sudden, there was this boom of hypergrowth in which the whole world adopted remote work at that status of infancy that we were in. So, as much as we would like to have standardized language in which we all use the same words and we all know that they mean the same things, that's just not the state of the market and not the state of the industry. So, yes, I have preferred terms. I think everybody that is an advocate and thought leader has their own preferred terms, but unfortunately, there just wasn't time enough for organic growth for all of those preferred terms to be aligned. So we are kind of stuck in this zone of needing to be flexible, and when somebody comes to us and says, "Oh, telework or boundaryless or distributed or whatever," we just kind of have to smile and nod and say, "Yes, that is what we're talking about. We need to be very flexible and accommodating because we're all going to be using different language for a while."
It is funny that, isn't it? Matt was commenting on that as well. He said you need to be very careful what word is adopted at the beginning, because once it's set into society norms, it's very difficult to change, isn't it? And you're almost, then stuck with a suboptimal reference for a term that doesn't necessarily do it any favor. We see this often in the outsourcing industry. It's generally referred to outsourcing, and that is a huge broad term, and it's not really reflective of what's done. Worse, I think, is two other terms, which is call center, and again, most people refer to the entire industry as call centers, and that's not really accurate. And then VAs or virtual assistants, which isn't really an accurate reflection at all. So it is interesting that industries get stuck with these kind of titles, yeah.
Absolutely, and that's the right word is stuck. We just have to acknowledge that, yeah, this is how it is, and we'll use the language that we need to use for society to understand, just as a mode of translation, if nothing else, right? Like, yes, we will speak your language so that you can help learn ours.
So some of the accusations about, well, 15 years ago, you must have really been an early adopter, because remote work simply was not physically possible. It wasn't possible until technology allowed it to be so, and it was only really 15 years ago that we functionally had a lot of, or most things on email, kind of a paperless office that enables these things, and just general access to conversational VoIP, video, task managers. And what was the impetus 15 years ago for companies to really do it? Because companies must have lost efficiency 15 years ago. Now, I think it's arguable, but do you think 15 years ago it was really just in pursuit of lifestyle versus efficiency?
I think that is a good question, because essentially we've had teleworking and telecommuting for about a half of a century now. We have 50 years of people working from home. But what has made it more and more common and accessible is the development of mass accessible technology, right? The more affordable it is, and the more mobile that technology became, such as smartphones and Wi-Fi connections, that's really when it became mass accessible. So yeah, I would say 15, 20 years ago is really when the average professional could start thinking about, how could I make this work for me and not have to wait for a company to provide the infrastructure in order to facilitate the processes and connections? It really has been quite fascinating to watch the evolution of remote work since then in the past 15 years. But I think that the pattern of history will continue to be the same, that as technology continues to evolve and become more mobile, and especially become more secure and accessible for the general population, we will continue to watch the acceptance and adoption of remote work climb.
It's always been considered a little bit fringe, isn't it? You know, I've spent time in co-living, co-working spaces. I've been involved with the digital nomad community. And there's been a sense, and I suppose this is the kind of nascent evolution of the industry. As you said, it's really just beginning. Pre-COVID, I think it was just considered a little bit fringe, not really proper people do this. Do you think that has significantly changed since the advent of COVID?
Oh, absolutely. I think even in my personal history, 15 years ago, when we started this as an organization, we made the decision to not have an office. We did not tell a soul. I mean, there is no way that we would have been considered a credible business if we did not have any real estate investments or a storefront of some kind. And so we were able to play it off as good customer service and, we'll meet you at your office and, oh, let's go to the event site and things like that. But over time, it became more and more accessible. But yeah, even late 2019, early 2020, there was still a raised eyebrow when you would say, well, I'm an executive of a company and I work from home. And there would always be like this awkward pause of like, wait a second, I don't think you know what an executive is, right? Like you obviously don't understand that's not possible in corporate America. And so there was a lot of lack of credibility and lack of realism when people were thinking about the compatibility of remote work with the business world. But yeah, here we are a year later, in which Fortune 500 company executive suites are now completely working from home and loving it, and pushing this massive change management process throughout their entire organizations from top to bottom because they can see the benefits of it. So yes, it has definitely, definitely grown in acceptance and credibility over the past year. And that's primarily because the executives and top-down influencers of the business world that said it was never possible were able to experience it themselves and really create their own opinion based on firsthand experience.
So much of business, as you say, is it's almost about signaling, isn't it? And I don't know if this is the sort of masculine aspect of business. It's the chest beating. And of course, this is why all the Fortune 100s need the huge buildings to signify the grandeur and stability of the companies. And it just doesn't sort of wash so well, and the grand meeting rooms and all this sort of stuff and the Wall Street. It's all about these strong signals, isn't it? And of course, a lot of business, of course, has to be about trust. And so do you think that work from home challenges those signals, and where can people get trust from if those traditional signals aren't there?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible to build a presence and to strengthen and activate a company culture in a virtual business world, but it definitely requires different context and different language in order to do that. And honestly, the hard answer is that in the virtual business world, you don't have a lot of places to hide. Yes, you have a website, and a website can look like anything you want it to look like, right? And the same is true kind of for real estate. You can make a massive real estate investment and look like you're this big successful company, but are you actually a big successful company? That's always a different question. So, we like to say in the remote work world that you just don't have anywhere to hide, and really who you are at the core of your company is revealed, and you have a mirror held up to you, and that's what we've seen across the entire world since COVID is, these companies all distributed very quickly and very unexpectedly, and they said, well, wait a second, our operations are terrible, and all of our workforce is feeling isolated and underappreciated because of remote work. And it's like, no, not necessarily. They're feeling like they don't have access to resources, and they're feeling invisible because your workflows are broken and because you haven't developed a strong company culture. That's not your location's problem. It's because you were hiding behind location in order to do that for you. You were misinterpreting proximity as connection or culture. And so there's a lot of cleaning up to do and a lot of myths to bust because it really is much, much more transparent in the virtual business world.
Do you think the office has its benefits? I use this analogy that I'm a healthy guy. I go to the gym a lot. I very seldom have the motivation to work out from home because it's not the right setting. There's a lot of distractions, and I don't have the proper equipment. Do you think there are benefits to an office where there's a community, there's colleagues, people learn and reflect and sort of see professional standards, and then is that compromised if people are sort of working from their sofa in their pajamas with half an eye on Netflix? Do you think that there are potential compromises from working from home?
Oh, absolutely. There are benefits to any location, a variety of locations, HQ office, your client's office, home office, being on the road, working from a park. Like, there are very, very strong benefits to working in a variety of locations. And that's what the remote work movement is all about. It is not trying to get everybody to work from home. That is unrealistic. And is really detrimental to the international economy, frankly. So what we want to do instead is to help people think about work in a different way, that you don't need to be in a specific location in order to be productive, that we want to help people understand that work is something that you do, not somewhere that you go. And because of that, you should be able to choose location, and for location to be more flexible so that you don't have to drive 2 hours to sit at a computer in order to be productive. We want people to be able to be productive no matter where they are. So this whole conversation and shift to remote work is not about getting people out of the office and into a home office. It's about, let's stop talking about location altogether. Let's just talk about how to get people connected and motivated and productive and autonomous, regardless of their location, whether they are in HQ office or in their home office or on the road or somewhere in between. They can still be productive because they are holding the keys to their productivity.
Yeah, was it Naval Ravikant maybe that said we're going to look back in disbelief in 20 or 30 years that we have a computer at home and we leave in the morning and drive 2 hours to go to a different computer and do our work? Like it does sound a little bit crazy, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it sounded crazy all those years ago. And now we fast forward to a modern reality in which we are carrying a computer in our pocket at all times of every day. And we're still traveling 2 hours to go to another computer that is stationary in a desk and producing, you know, terrible emissions for the environment and is creating toxic conditions for people with mental health concerns. Like, yeah, there's a lot of ripple effects there that we're going to look back and say, wait, you want me to go back to what next year? I don't think so.
Yeah. It is huge. It's a seismic change, isn't it? Look, I'm in the outsourcing industry, and one of the biggest sort of difficulties is, you know, we fundamentally, the outsourcing industry, have a value proposition that we can save prospective employers about 70% on staffing costs. And, you know, the way that we do that is by sourcing talent globally. Just that's it. You know, instead of looking in your local market, you look for talent globally, and that has a lot of other benefits in that, you know, your local market might be 100,000 people or 10 million people, whereas there's 8 billion people in the globe. And it just, so many people are resistant to, you know, how does it work? How do we know they are working? How do we keep them accountable? How do they know that, you know, how do we trust? How do we know that they're working for me and not another client at the same time? It's something that it almost takes a push like COVID to sort of push people out of their comfort zone, and then they realize the benefits. And, you know, I'm a huge proponent for remote. I'm a huge proponent for outsourcing, of course. But the primary driver, I think, is just this, the opportunity across maybe a journey of 20 or 30 years that I think we're going to see globalized workforce, globalized networks, globalized consumption. You know, that's my sort of exciting utopia. Do you think that kind of COVID is helping all of this along a little bit? Well, maybe I'll reframe that. Do you see the same kind of questions of resistance, of concern, when you are sort of proposing or discussing distributed workplaces?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the majority of our work as consultants prior to 2020 were all cases for change, helping people understand that, yes, this is a reality. Yes, it can work for your organization. Yes, there are massive financial benefits and incentives to be accessed if you are willing to consider and optimize this model. And again, it was just met with that same resistance that we were discussing earlier of executives saying, no, there's no way it's possible. Just the disbelief and doubt that this would be possible and a viable solution for their organization. And then now that they've had to dive into it, they're saying, oh, well, this is a great idea. And who knew that this was such a beneficial business strategy? And it's like, oh yeah. So people definitely need to experience it themselves in order to, you know, experience that proof. But I do see that a big shift that is happening now and will be required to shift more is that word that's already come up a couple of times is trust, right? We're going to need to think about business in a whole new way that is much more centric on emotional intelligence and metrics. We really need to stop using our senses. You know, this is really where business comes from, is the Industrial Revolution, where we all came together in a co-located work environment for the same time in order to produce products together in an assembly line. And so we are just so used to this. I mean, generationally, not just us individually, but as a society, we are so conditioned to going into a work environment to watch work happen. We have just socially learned to use our eyes to watch work happen. This is, and especially at the management level. So there's going to have to be a lot of unlearning about our habits and our expectations and our communication methods that are not as sensory as they used to be, that we are leaning into a different style of communication, more emotional intelligence about like trust and accountability and empathy in order for this to work sustainably.
And it's a complete sort of frame change because, you know, historically you cited sort of industrialization and factories and even farming and physical production. There are widgets that come out the end, and it's easy to monitor rates of work with visual widgets coming out. And but now work is becoming more and more, I don't know if intangible is the right word, but you can't touch it, you can't feel it, and it's difficult to monitor the true productivity of these things, isn't it? So companies generally, whether they're sitting in an office or remote, have to reframe how they're monitoring productivity. And I think how do you do that? Does it move more towards just, you know, love and trust, or do you think that you can sort of quantitatively measure and monitor productivity when so much of work now is in the intangibles?
You know, isn't that funny that there are so many companies that will say that, like, oh, you just need to trust your employees more. And it's like, hey, look, I come from operations management. Like, there is no way in hell that I'm just going to trust my employees more and hope that that affects my bottom line better. Like, no, these are still businesses. We still need to run them and operate them as businesses. But then what is on the other end of that spectrum is people saying, well, see, I told you so. So we do need to continue to monitor our employees and we need to supervise them. And that's also the wrong direction, because you're saying, well, wait a second. Yes, that takes you back to a zone in which you're comfortable because it replicates the office environment in which you have that sensory supervision opportunity. However, what are you supervising? Are you supervising true productivity and output, or are you just supervising and tracking activity instead of accomplishment? So we really need to rethink of this in a completely new way and identify how are we accurately tracking productivity of our employees. And that comes down to the operational infrastructure of the organization to say, all right, first, are the employees empowered to be self-managers, or are they dependent on waiting for instructions and assignments from their boss? So are they able to work autonomously and be self-managers in a location-independent environment? Then are they able to construct a role for themselves and a daily workload? Do they understand what their objectives and key results are? Do they understand what their key performance indicators are? Can they work in an environment that requires less sensory supervision? And then on top of that, putting in a digital infrastructure that enables the accurate tracking and reporting of true productivity that is based on results. So do we necessarily care when somebody completes their tasks? Does it actually need to be between the hours of, you know, 9 and 10:30 a.m. that they complete this task? Maybe, maybe not though. And if it doesn't, if it's not dependent on time, then we can just track the result and understand that, great, they completed the task. They got it done before the deadline. I created a workflow of trust and able in order for that to happen. Done. Like, it doesn't really matter when it happens or where it happens, as long as it happens. So we can't just track the results. We have to create the environment and expectations for those results to occur and then track the results.
Some jobs need to have presence, to be physically present. Some jobs need to cover, you know, certain times of the day and shifts and schedules. And, you know, examples of that are, let's say telemedicine or customer service. Do you think that if remote work sort of goes to the end of the spectrum, there might be a redefining of society, almost like the blue collar, white collar society, where those ones bound to the office and bound for a kind of an 8-hour shift to cover a certain requirement are the blue collar, and then the more creatives, the professions, are the white collar, where they work from anywhere. Because, you know, there's a lot of compliance. If you're going to take card payments, you need to be within a secure environment. Well, currently, you know, maybe technology will change that. If you need to do customer service, you need to have an 8-hour coverage. Do you think that, you know, this may then define the separation of blue and white collar workers, for example?
Yes, absolutely. It's something that socioeconomically we're very concerned about, especially because of the hyper growth of remote work. We didn't have the opportunity to really construct and mold this on a societal level that would help prevent that. It just was adopted too quickly, too early. And so, yeah, there's a lot of cleaning up to do to prevent that discrimination from happening. However, I think it's also important to note that a big misconception about remote work that is fueling this discrimination is that people are saying, oh, remote work is, and workplace flexibility in general is one size fits all. You either can or you can't. And that is what's causing this this division in the social classes more than anything. And that's really unfortunate, because that's not true. It's not true that remote work is just a yes or no option. There's so many ways for it to be strategized and adapted and manipulated to meet a variety of different tasks and roles. For example, something that we've seen a high adoption rate in industries of remote work post-COVID has been in mobile workforces. Workforces like plumbers and construction companies and auto mechanics that are saying, wait a second, I've never really thought about it before, but I'm a mobile worker. Like, I'm a remote worker. Like, wait a second, why do I have an office if I'm going to be on site all the time? Like, I'm never in my office. Why am I making that unnecessary investment in real estate? I can just operate as a virtual organization and make my profit margin that much stronger. And so it's really important that every professional, regardless of their industry, regardless of their tasks, think about, are there ways that I can incorporate flexibility into my role? Because the chances are, if we don't polarize it into, is this department remote friendly or not, or is this role remote friendly or not, and we really boil it down to the granular level of, is this task remote friendly or not, then we can start to see a lot more accessibility to the benefits of remote work for a wider variety of industries and professionals.
This industry, as you say, is still very nascent, very young, and it's a little bit ad hoc still, you know, and it's the pioneers that are leading this, and there's not really the sort of regulatory environment yet. Everyone is kind of feeling this out in the dark as they go, which is, I think, as much a good thing as a bad thing. As you say, with industrialization, you know, people started in factories maybe 100-odd years ago, and there were no safety standards. And over the last maybe 50 to 80 years, these environments, the offices and the factories, became very conscious of having a safe environment. And even, you know, your commute to the office and from the office is often the responsibility of the employer. There's health and safety standards, there's insurances, and then there's employment laws and obligations. And you're in the US, you know, there's, I believe every state is different. How do you roll out the same sort of regulatory employer obligation towards their staff health and safety, when the staff could be scattered across 50 different states with 50 different employment and health laws, or potentially across the globe, and then they're sitting in their own home environment? How do you see that whole thing playing out?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you said it yourself that it's going to take a long time for legislation to catch up. Per country, per state, per city, there's so much work to do in terms of taxation structures, employment laws, occupational safety and health regulations, like you were mentioning, like all of that not only didn't exist prior to 2020, we were trying to advocate for it, but because the market was so small, they just weren't listening to us. So it didn't exist at all. And now we have to go through the process as a global society of catching up. And unfortunately, government processes take a long time. This is not just a matter of like sitting in a room for a couple of hours and hammering out some policy terms and posting a memo. This is public sector, and it's going to take a while, especially in democratic governments. And so we really need to be extremely patient, but also very involved as citizens in helping governments to understand what the benefits of this are and what the policies need to be in order to protect both the employers and the employees in and the governments, all three parties in this new method of working. In the meantime, how we can protect ourselves is every single person that is working remotely and every single company that has employees that are working remotely need to have a remote work policy that is signed and agreed to by all relevant parties. I cannot emphasize this enough. So many companies are just saying, well, number one, they don't have a policy at all, or they're just saying, yes, okay, I waive all liability of workplace accidents and, sign here. And that is absolutely not what needs to occur. It needs to be a very comprehensive document about what is required from everybody to make this work. What are the hours that you are expected to be working? How is performance going to be measured? What are environmental expectations of, background noise? Who is responsible for payment and compensation of equipment expenses and internet costs? And is an employee going to be discriminated against if they don't have a fast enough internet speed at home, or if there is a child crying in the background? Is that going to affect their perception or their reviews at work? Like, there's so much that needs to be considered, and most people don't even know where to begin with those terms. So it is so essential to work with a consultant or expert of some kind to say, all right, what do I need to think about as I'm writing my policy? What are the options for my different terms? How do I protect myself as an employer? How do I protect my workforce? And what is the best that we can do to put a band-aid on this situation, and while we wait for legislation to catch up?
That's fascinating, isn't it? Look, there's sort of a comparable, I suppose, to offshore staffing and outsourcing, and that obviously is people sourcing staff in the Philippines or India, typically, developing economies, very different employment structures, very different considerations. There's a certain amount of opacity and distrust, and so you have these intermediaries called outsourcing suppliers or BPOs that basically control all of that for the client. They ensure that the staff are properly employed, that all the compliance is there, and then the employer has none of that hassle. They just pay an invoice at the end of the month. And what you have mentioned is it's kind of Pandora's box. It's a lot of headaches, isn't it? And employers potentially then just go, look, we can't do that. We're too busy. Everyone's coming into the office, and that's a shame. And I think it's good that you are out there, kind of backfilling the infrastructure for these businesses, because they're too busy. They just need to kind of concentrate on their operations, and this needs to be done by people that are specifically focused on the industry, like yourself. Yeah, and I find it interesting that again, it's the cutting edge of maybe only smaller companies have been distributed workforce prior to COVID, or the majority of them. Now that COVID's happened, smaller companies can live on the edge a little bit. They don't need to be fully compliant, or they get a slap on the wrist. Whereas if it's Facebook, if it's Google doing things improperly, and I can only imagine if they're all working remotely and then their employees cross the state line, you know, what happens then to their employment contracts, to their liabilities? And I imagine it's all of these bigger companies that are reaching out saying, look, we need these policies in place. We need the protection. We need the structure. Is that how you're seeing it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two parts to that too, that most people don't understand. And the phases are that first, you need to construct those policies to begin with. So, okay, what tools are we going to use? What are the performance expectations of people within those tools? What are the terms of our policy? What is our remote work model going to be? There's a lot of upfront decisions that need to be made. And then after that, there's an entire new phase of work that is much, much more long-term, that's all about maintenance. So think about it. If you now have employees in, you know, 16 different countries and multiple different United States or even counties within the countries that they're operating in, and each of those individual cities, counties, and countries are all developing new laws to catch up with the hypergrowth of remote work, that is an enormous amount of work, not only in the front end, in the short term of making the initial decisions, but then maintaining the monitoring of what are all of those laws in each of those individual places and making sure that you continue to be compliant in all of those areas. So yeah, it is absolutely essential to hire a consultant in the short term to help you build those infrastructures that will minimize the stress and chaos and expense of monitoring all of those laws long term. It could end up costing your company a lot of money if you decide to ignore it and just let your employees live wherever they want for the time being. It could cost you tens of thousands of dollars per employee per year.
It must be, I can just imagine, it must be an HR nightmare that, you know, previously people were in this safe cocoon of this building that's been built and all the, you know, health and safety regs are all in place and all the policies, and then suddenly they're working from home. You know, if it's in Google, they're sitting in San Fran somewhere, that's kind of okay. But then if they go to Texas and then all these different laws apply, and then if they go over to Morocco and they're sitting in Morocco still working, and have they declared that to the employer or haven't they? Or it's just a Pandora's box of, look, I don't think as an entrepreneur, I don't think much of it matters at all. But from the sort of legal and regulatory, and it will all kind of wash out soon, won't it? And it all needs to be formalized.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a chaotic headache. I mean, it really boils down to even small decisions about if you have a performance review in which, let's say, you are giving a disciplinary warning to an employee, you might have to give that warning to one employee differently than you would another employee just because of the state of country that they live in. It is something that you need to be hyper aware of and very, very compliant with at all times. So yes, it is so essential to be working with an organization that thinks about this night and day to help keep you on track so that you don't have to worry about that. Yes, that's available during consultancies. Back in the day before remote work consultancies were started, before there were any solutions for distributed companies, we used professional employment organizations, PEOs, that were designed to do that for really large organizations, right, that were global companies. They kind of had their head in this space. And so a lot of distributed companies would use them as a Band-Aid. But the problem was that those PEOs were made for corporations that were global companies. So if you couldn't afford them as a smaller mid-sized business, you had to do all of that manually. And as a former COO that had to build those departments from scratch and to manually conduct all of those reviews, it is an operational and efficiency nightmare. So thankfully now there are great organizations like remote.com and Deel and Boundless and Oyster that all take care of that for you and are priced much more efficiently for small and mid-sized businesses.
Yeah, I mean, that's another conversation completely, isn't it? The Deel and Boundless and Oyster, and they're all, you know, and they're sort of Silicon Valley funded, and So there's obviously people are betting on this being a trend. And again, you know, you need someone else to build the infrastructure, not the employer themselves, because otherwise it becomes a tail wagging the dog, doesn't it? In that,
yeah,
you know, if it's going to cost the employer $100,000 to sort out the employment regulation, it would be up to the employer to say, no, you know, just come into the office. Like, how can we allow this if it creates such cost and risk and uncertainty? But you know, and that's capitalism, isn't it? Like, infrastructure will be built in by private parties, and eventually all of this will be ironed out. But it's exciting to see that in 2020 there are such huge structural changes. Maybe it's, you know, it's being catalyzed by something not so fortunate, but it's so exciting to see that, you know, in a fairly mature society there are these huge structural changes, and then we quickly have to kind of backfill everything with all of the regulation and structure.
Yeah, it is. We really need to live in a reality in which the public sector and private sector are working together a lot more closely than they ever have before, because we need the speed and agility of the private sector to be developing tech solutions to enable this information to be distributed at scale, and to be sharing their experiences and insights from being the employers. But then, you know, on the other hand, we need the legislation. We still need government to exist. And so, you know, historically, it's kind of been pitted against each other. And now we need to change that and make sure that they're working together to roll out these solutions as quickly as possible.
I want to talk about the future, and we'll sort of start to round off. I'm mindful of your time, but just initially then, you know, if you have a resistant client, what is your elevator pitch to someone that is, you know, maybe an accountant with 10 staff or an electrician with 20 staff, and they say, you know, how do I know they're working? How do I trust they're working? How do I keep track of them? What's your answer to that?
Yeah, so virtual offices are constructed to build boundaries around time and geographic space, right? And so we're used to that, like, put people in the same place at the same time so that we can manage work more effectively. So when they have that boundary removed and they just leave the office, they kind of feel like it's a free-for-all, like, oh no, it's the wild, wild west out here. Like, there is no control, there is no structure. And we say, no, actually, there's even more structure in remote work than there is in co-located work, because what we're drawing boundaries around is information. So we are putting this structure around how do we really optimize workflows and the sharing of knowledge as quickly and efficiently as possible. So when we come in as organizational consultants and to help build policies, what we're doing primarily is building infrastructure. We are building digital tool stacks that help create a virtual place for all of this communication to be happening. And then beyond that, we are helping them use those tools as efficiently as possible to make sure that they do know what is happening in their business any minute of every day. They know what's going on. They know what's missing, what's not missing, where people are excelling, where they're not excelling. They know that maybe even better than they did before. It's just happening in a different way through different channels.
So the future, you know, regardless of, well, you know, there's a lot of different views, prognoses on COVID, the resolution of COVID, but I think remote is now on everyone's agenda. People are feeling this freedom and flexibility. Where do you see the future in 20 or 30 years? You know, if this follows a sort of trajectory as it's gone, are we going to have cities in the future? What are going to happen to the established cities? Are they going to become sort of relics of the past, like you know, old industrial towns with the old factories? Where is all of this leading to?
Oh, no, it's just like we were talking about earlier, that there is still a need and a place for the office, just as much as there ever has been. It's just going to play a different role. So cities and offices are going to be much more about collaboration and about culture development, as opposed to come here to be productive. Overall, what the shift is going to be is a much, much less conversation and dependency on location in general. We're going to start focusing more about what we're doing and how we're doing it, not where we're doing it. So because of that, there will be a lot more equal distribution between urban and rural environments. There will be more distribution between industries, that there won't necessarily be hubs of industry hotspots, but there will be multiple areas where you can access great thought leadership and resource development. It's just going to be spread out. Opportunity, accessibility, resources, everything is going to be a lot less dependent on geographic location, including our economies.
It's an exciting future, isn't it? You would have to think that it weakens New York's position. It weakens, you know, the position of the Bay Area if, you know, people have generally congregated there because the opportunities, the work is there, the high salaries. And you need those high salaries to pay the high prices for the properties. But all of that kind of gets unwound a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, those cities definitely are in a dangerous position because of how quickly and unexpectedly this shift is happening. However, we also have to look at the flip side of that coin and really recognize and frankly celebrate how much this is impacting rural counties and rural communities all around the world. We're seeing this in Europe, we're seeing this in Australia, we're seeing this in the United States. There are now so many programs that exist to help people identify where they could live outside of urban areas that really match the lifestyle that they're looking for. And then they can take that urban level of salary and inject it into these what previously were dying communities and really revive the economic development of that local city. We were doing this prior to COVID in several different programs that I was designing and advising, and we were just fighting so hard to incentivize people to move to in danger zones that were declining in their economy. And now we're just seeing people flock there naturally because they never really needed the incentive to move out of urban areas. They wanted to all along. They just needed permission to do that. So now we're just watching that happen organically, which is really exciting and definitely unexpected.
And as a last question, how do you see that playing out if you extend that scenario that, you know, I think a lot of Americans see things on in an American perspective, and almost the perimeter of anything possible is within the borders of America. But, you know, how long will it take for Americans to realize, why am I still employing within America? Or, you know, so they kind of push past the local boundaries where people can travel and commute to work. But then I assume there's an assumption that it stays within the US. But then how long do you think it will be before it is considered a global workforce? Do you think that is likely, or do you think people are going to stay retained within sort of country or cultural sections?
You know, because of our lifestyles and just our physical and human nature, yes, we will still stay focused on local communities. However, especially in the business world, there will be a lot more fluidity. Because when you are working in the virtual business world as a remote professional, your office is the internet, and it doesn't take long of working in that office for you to realize that the circles that exist in the internet have nothing to do with geographic boundaries. And so, yes, we do see a lot of globalization in a much different way in the virtual business world. And there are incredible international teams that exist in fully distributed teams because they are willing to think about, well, where is the best talent that I can find? And, you know, very, very quickly, the limitations of country boundaries are broken. Usually the only reasons that they continue to exist is because of taxation and regulation. But if a company is willing to accommodate international taxation, then it is very, very common for virtual employers to hire literally from anywhere.
I find that such an exciting prospect, and it's the first time ever, you know, literally ever, that we're faced with this prospect. And historically, as you say, with all the factories, labor migration has always been controlled because it's a physical thing. You can close borders, open borders, have quotas, you know, and that becomes a political thing. Whereas now the borders really can't be controlled. You can't control the movement of the labor force so easily. And again, I think that's something that regulation has got to catch up to, because the reality is that people are going to be interacting more globally now. And I think the exciting prospect for that is, like Yuval Harari says, is, you know, there's a power law of networks in that if you live in a small village of 10 people, then there's a relatively small network opportunity. Whereas if you network all 8 billion people on the planet, there's just a, you know, kind of exponential gain of opportunity for everyone within that network. It's super exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, just think about the impact of that for small businesses. You know, you're not just selling to a local market or hiring talent from a local market, whoever happens to be in your city. But right from the get-go, a small business has so much more earning potential because you have a global market and you can pinpoint and target your market so much more accurately and increase your earning potential that much more. I mean, we could see remote work not only turn organizational models upside down, but also just economy and the growth of businesses in general.
Laurel, it's been an amazing conversation, and you know, I have always encouraged everyone to think more globally and to sort of take advantage of the bigger networks out there. But it has to be done properly, and there are costs, there are downsides, and so it is super valuable to seek advice, and to seek proper structuring. Can you tell people a little bit about Distribute and how they can get in touch with you if they want to know more?
Of course, thank you. So yes, Distribute Consulting, we do specialize in all things remote work. So, you know, our conversation today has been very heavily dependent and revolved around change management, which is our specialty. And as you can imagine, definitely has been our specialty for the past year. So we do help people and employers write those policies and make sure that they have the digital infrastructure in place that they need to, and really optimize operations of communications and workflows and productivity tracking within those structures. However, we also do a lot of other work. We do strategic initiatives for companies and nonprofit organizations and governments that are trying to leverage virtual jobs to solve a greater concern like diversity and inclusion or economic development or environmental sustainability. And then we also advise products and startup accelerators and investors on what is the future of remote work and what products need to exist and how do we need to be developing them and marketing them in order to meet the needs of our growing industry. So we absolutely love our work, and we're just a bunch of remote work nerds that are here to just help people really understand what is this that's going on and how can we be a part of it in the future.
And it's such an exciting time to be a part of it, isn't it? Because everyone has been, you know, whether they like it or not, forced into this predicament, and it's about making the best of it. And people are realizing that it's not a hardship, like there's actually positive net gain from all this. So super,
Absolutely.
super exciting time to be involved in all this. Thank you so much, Laurel.
You're
And
so welcome.
if where can they find you?
You know, on the internet, right? So LinkedIn and Twitter are always great places to find me. And of course, our company website, which is distributeconsulting.com.
Fantastic. And I'll put all of those links into the show notes. Thank you so much, Laurel.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That was Laurel Farah of distributeconsulting.com. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.